I have preached forever to my team and to my associate and anybody that'll listen is we're selling time in a chair. And I want to maximize that time for profitability's sake of every single hour. And that is an extremely productive, profitable appointment.
Welcome to the Digital Smile Hub, the podcast that is dedicated to making clinical dentistry simple. Join us as we decode the complexities of dental care by providing actionable insights into the diverse aspects of clinical practice, the latest trends, and the newest technologies. Whether you're a seasoned clinician or just starting out of dental school, listen in on engaging discussions, expert interviews, and a wealth of tips and tricks to enhance your clinical workflows. So turn up that volume and get ready to transform your clinical practice with the Digital Smile Hub. And now, here's your host, Dr. Tim Anderson.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. This is Tim Anderson again, and I'm joined, as promised from last week, with a very special guest that I love talking to. I get to spend a little bit of time with him here and there as we cross paths in our educational ventures. But there's certain people you meet in your life that are just easy people to be around. Like, we all have those people in our lives where we just like being around them. It's just, this guy is one of those guys that, and everybody I know who talks to him just likes to be around him. So I thought it'd be great to get him on. Ironically, he was supposed to be on the podcast in our early days, week two, I think, or three. And we had some major audio video things that went on. And so his episode was deleted. So we're having him back, but actually we're having him for the very first time for all of you. So welcome to the podcast, the one and only Dr. Kevin Fryer. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. That warmed my heart. What is left of my heart?
I know. It's a new year. And, you know, my wife and I, every year, we try to pick a word that describes our intent for the year. And last year, I think it was last year, it might have been actually the year before, but I think it was last year that one of our main words was gratitude.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, I don't know if I fully grasped that word and the intent behind why we chose that until really towards the end of the year when we were reflecting back on the year.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of made... Do you do New Year's resolutions?
I don't really. You know, I do spend some time your new year can start any day, right? It could start June 14th, but, you know, we put some importance on January 1st. But I do kind of reflect at least on the year and what some goals that I would like to have. So there's some reflection. I don't write anything down or anything crazy like that.
Well, this year I was like, I'm going to verbally put it out there in the universe because I'm a person, I need to be held accountable by everybody other than myself, because if it's just up to me, it just never happens. But if I say I'm going to do it and I put it out there, then I kind of feel like I'm obligated. I'm really good. I'm at task oriented and following timelines and schedules, but I will put it to the very last second to do it. See, he just took a dig at me, you guys. That was an inside joke that cut me deep. So, funny story about this. So, as I'm putting together interviews and topics of things that you guys want to listen to and hear about, I have to set up these interviews in advance. And I had been messaging back and forth with Kevin for forever. And we finally came on a date to record. And he's like, okay, 8 o'clock. I'm like, whoa, oh man, that's your time. Like in my head, that was 9 o'clock my time. And I'm like, okay, I think I can do that. And actually his first time I think was 9 o'clock. I'm like, 10 o'clock is way too late. I gotta go to bed. But I could swing 9. So he and I were supposed to record yesterday at what I thought was 9 o'clock central. And clearly I don't understand that which direction the sun rises and sets.
Yeah.
And how that whole time thing works.
See, at my house, the sun rises in the east.
And I feel like that's what everybody else keeps, that's what they keep saying.
Yeah.
You know, but, and it makes sense to me. It's just the whole clock thing doesn't really register. And ironically, Kevin, you were not the very first, my wife, I told her the story and she just died because she's like, Tim, you are an idiot. This is a common thing with me. I'm like, okay, if I'm in this city, what time am I speaking and all that? So anyway, Kevin was gracious. He called me at 7, which was 8 o'clock his time. And I thought we were at 9, and I'm like, I can't do it. And he couldn't do it. So he came back. So time zones are good. We're working on it. So that's not my New Year's that's not my New Year's resolution, actually. But it should be, maybe. No, one of what we were talking about, like one of the things that I really want to focus on is relationships. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's so easy for all of us, whether it's in our professional lives as we're doing the hustle and bustle of grinding and building our practice, or you know, when you get to your stage where you're bringing on an associate and all of that kind of stuff, or you know, if it's like your professional life and you know, say you just got married or you just have kids and you're doing that whole, you know, growing your family, that those growth phases, it's really easy to get so focused in on yourself that you kind of forget about a lot of the other people around you.
I agree.
That mean a lot to you, but yeah. It's never intentional. It just happens, and time flies. And so I'm at a point in my life right now where I'm like, I need to make an active effort to be more social and put an active role and effort into maintaining relationships. And a lot of this got driven home a couple podcasts ago. I talked about my best friend that had had a brain tumor and all this. And that like really drove that home for me was like, I need to maintain these relationships. So that's why, like, I said those nice things about you, but man, I meant every word of it. There's just people in your lives that are important, and you're one of those people to me. So,
well, I love you too, Tim. We've had some good times together, and you know, we've slept.
We're gonna have many more
in the same room.
In the same, he has been my bunkmate a few times, so it's been fun.
Excellent.
Here's what's cool. So for everybody who doesn't like Kevin. Kevin has his own podcast. Kevin's like, everybody knows Kevin. But Kevin, for those people living under a rock who don't know you, who are you? What do you do? Where do you practice? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I went to The Ohio State University. I graduated in 1989, which was many, many decades ago. We barely had electricity back then. And I had to go to school in a horse and buggy. It was a long time ago. Dentistry has changed dramatically from 1989 till now, as all of our lives are. I currently practice in Mayfield Heights, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland, an east suburb of Cleveland. I've pretty much lived in Cleveland all my life. My practice is within walking distance of the middle school I went to way back when in the 70s. I do that. I have a podcast with my podcast partner, Zach Myers from Kansas City, called The Very Clinical Podcast. We've been doing that for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. So that's a lot of fun. And then my other passion is helping mentor some classes at 3D Dentists, which you also do, Tim. So that's how we have some family time together. So those are really the big three things in my life, besides my wife and son and all that good stuff. And my dogs.
And your dogs.
Don't forget the dogs.
Fur babies, man. They're part of your family, too.
They are.
So, and you recently, in your practice recently, you just brought on an associate, correct?
I did, yes. And you did also, too, right?
I did. I know. That's why I kind of want to talk about this a little bit. Because we both brought on an associate about the same time.
Yeah. It went really well. I think part of the reason it went well is that I've been lucky enough to glean some information from some highly knowledgeable and talented people in our lives, T-Bone and Sully. I think part of the reason it went so well is I basically gave away my schedule and allowed my associate to, right from the start, have a full schedule, which was basically my patients, but peeling back some of the things like the implants and some of the endo stuff. And then so he was able to do all the bread and butter stuff right away, and his schedule was full. And then we started peppering in some of these more specialty procedures as time went on.
And I think that's, like, I hope, you know, everybody's at a different stage within their career. And I hope everybody kind of, like, hears what Kevin said, because, you know, we none of us get anywhere by accident. We get there through a byproduct of our relationships with people, our experiences, our successes, our failures usually are what really drive us. And one of the things that I value so much, and I think Kevin could agree here, is that surrounding yourself by a tribe of people that really believe in you personally, as well as professionally, that honestly are willing to give you sometimes some tough love.
Sure.
Sometimes some attaboys and some good love, but also just having people in your life that help guide you along that journey. Because both Kevin and I were very fortunate to have the ability and the fortunate opportunity to bring on an associate into our practice, because our practices were continuing to grow and we both want to do more things and other things. And what what I love that we have is we have a circle of people within the 3D family that has really helped guide both of us on that onboarding process to make it successful for all parties. And sometimes I feel like that doesn't always happen with associates. And oddly, the first one, this is not my first associate. My first associate, I failed miserably because it was about me. It wasn't about the practice. It wasn't about my associate's growth. It was more about me and me figuring it out. And I was living on my island and trying to do it all myself. So I love hearing that you guys are kicking butt.
Yeah. It's gone over there really, really well.
Ohio. Yeah. So one of the things you talked about when you mentioned your associate is that you kind of filled his schedule and his guy, right? What's his name?
Matt.
Okay.
Matt. Mm-hmm. Matt Arzinski. Shout out to Matt.
Shout out, Matt. Matt, we might have to get you on here. You know what I should do? I'm going to get Matt and my associate Tom on here as an associate kind of roundtable thing. I kind of like that idea. We might have to do this.
Great idea.
You got to be careful. Luckily, it's not live, so I can edit this if I need to. But
brilliant.
It'd be fun. Yeah. No, but one of the things that you mentioned when you're talking about how you onboard them, you basically gave away your schedule and you're giving all of those core foundational core foundational procedures that every new grad and new clinician needs to do to kind of just get their reps and grow and kind of level up. But you then also kind of make sure that, you know, I don't know if it was T-Bone. Somebody told me one time that my practice is not your residency. I don't know who told me that, but I love that.
That sounds like T-Bone. Yes.
Right. I love that because it highlights like everybody gets out of school and we want to do all these big, crazy things, but sometimes we have to take a step back. And slowing down to speed up is a concept that 3D really believes in. And and honestly, I think is so understood. I don't know if that even makes sense.
Misunderstood. Yes.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what we need to do is a lot of our team members, we don't want to overwhelm them and put them in a situation where they're set up to fail and they lose their confidence and then they never want to do a root canal or an extraction or a wisdom tooth or whatever. So I did want to talk because I actually interviewed a classmate of mine last week who did a startup practice, built it from nothing, and has this beautiful, huge, awesome business. And he loves the business of dentistry, not necessarily the procedural side. And what was interesting, he was like, I don't want to do any endo. And I'm like, oh, I like endo. And some of the things that he loved, I didn't love. Some of the things he hates, I don't hate. And it was just interesting to talk to other clinicians. One of the low-hanging fruits I feel in a lot of our practices are all of the missed opportunities that are already in our practice.
100%. So yes.
All those patients that we refer out for wisdom teeth, for basic extractions, for root canals. And at first, I was not a huge root canal person because I was so inefficient and it was unpredictable and I struggled. And then I got to listen and hear some of the things that Dr. Kevin over here is doing. And it was kind of an eye-opener for me and really changed how I look and approach a lot of my cases. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to kind of have like the polar opposite of like, hey, I don't want to do any endo, to, you know, how you are doing your endo and then at what point, like how much of this are you kind of teaching your associate?
Yeah.
You know, currently. So go for it.
All right. Well, I think just starting off philosophically, if you run a general practice, you have people that come to your office with toothaches. That is a common thing that happens. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Every day. Yeah. Well, hopefully not every day, but every week.
Every day. Yeah. So those people either need extraction, graft, and implant, or you need to save their tooth with an endo and a crown. I'm talking about normal, everyday posterior tooth, bicuspid or molar. Early on, I'm talking about these late 90s, I realized that if I was sending that procedure out of my office, that was a big income stream at a time where I needed everything. I needed money to pay the bills. And that was something that I felt I could do. And adding up the numbers, an endo and a crown, whether I was doing it back then in two visits or three visits, whatever it was back then, that is a big production center potentially for my office if I can figure out how to do the endo efficiently. By this point, we should be able to do a crown efficiently. It's always the endo that bogs us down. So if you flash forward decades, technology comes into our lives, right? So the way that we're doing endo in our practice is leveraging our cone beam, our CEREC, and I use the Comet EndoPilot for doing our endo. So those three pieces of technology together has made this a pretty seamless thing. Now, I will say also early on in the CEREC world, I saw people doing these endo and crowns in one visit. This is not something I've invented at all. I'm just coming at it from maybe a little bit of a different angle, leveraging more of the technology that is available to us now versus 2008 when I started doing CEREC. So I think that if you look at the profitability of procedures that we're doing, certainly an implant, a single implant crown, you know, the actual time involved in doing that, that's got to be one of the most profitable procedures that we can do. Like I'm talking to like green light,
absolutely,
every day.
Healthy, but abundant bone.
Yes, that is the most profitable thing we can do. I will counter that with a molar endo crown. It's going to take you more time, but the products that you're using, the supplies, are going to cost you a lot less. So there's some balance there. If you're someone who believes that they're selling time, like I believe, then the implant, a single implant crown, that's going to kill it. But if you can leverage all of those things together when doing a molar endo and crown at the same time, if you can get that done in an hour and a half, 2 hours, that's a very productive slice of your day. So that's
absolutely,
you know, kind of the background of where we're coming to. So in terms of how we're doing this, you know, ask me anything you want as we go through this. So I'm not, you know, I feel like I might skip over something, but I think the first piece of technology to leverage and really get this done right is the cone beam.
And I, you know what's interesting? I am so amazed, even to this day, how many clinicians I talk to that still are resistant to integrating the imaging into their practice.
Yeah.
Like it, that is one of those, because I think sometimes the narrative becomes, it's like one of three things. It's either A, I don't do implants, so I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
B, I don't do endo, or I don't like endo, so I don't need it. And they're like, the third one is like, it's too complicated to interpret. Like I can't read it. And all of those just shock me, because one of my favorite quotes, I feel like I've used it all this time on this podcast, is that we overestimate what we can do in a year and we underestimate what we can do in a decade. Like, I don't even know who said that quote, but I love it, because I never in a million years thought I would ever want to be doing all NX procedures.
Right.
Three years ago, I would have never imagined that's where I'd be in my career right now.
Yeah.
And if I don't have an infrastructure of basic diagnostic technology like cone beam, you never have the opportunity to get there. And what I like that you said, you were talking about how you have to know how to do the crown prep, right? That's one of those core things that Matt's learning, Tom's learning, like they're getting really efficient at doing that, those core procedures. The thing is, everything builds on itself. So as you do more and more crowns, you know, it starts with fillings. Those are small decay. And then eventually you get into a larger decay, fracture teeth. You start doing crowns. And then eventually you're going to see teeth with even bigger decay that are going to require some pulpal therapy. And so that becomes the next layer that you add on to it. And then they're going, and yes, I love titanium, but titanium's not a fix-all for everyone.
Sure.
Like there's still value in doing it. No. Yeah. But there are then a lot of cases where either A, the endo failed, or B, the caries is so large that it's not predictable to restore this tooth, so we got to get rid of it. So that opens the door for socket preservation and ridge preservation and extractions, which then builds into tooth replacement. And so what I love about how your mentality is that everything continues to build on itself. And even though you don't do any of those implants for the root canals, and you only do fillings and crowns right now, that's okay. But just you have to go into things with an open mind is you don't realize how technology changes this. Like if I look implant dentistry 15, 20 years, like in the 80s, I don't want to be a part of that. Like taking a cone beam or taking a pan and then hoping the anatomy is somewhere in that area. Like after doing enough implants guided and planning the cases, like you see so many anatomical variations that I'm like, how would I have ever known this without a cone beam? Like technology reduces the barriers for you to say no to leveling up. And that's what I love technology. So just because you don't do it now, don't close that door, but see the value of that cone beam because like Kevin said, cone beams where this all starts. Like it's, you got to get the information. So sorry, I totally hijacked that.
No, you're good. So I think there's a couple of things we're seeing the same way that the technology democratizes the specialty procedures.
That was a fancier way to say that.
It allows us to do things that we never could have done before. And in a funny story, when the cone beam was being sold to me, the person who sold it to me, who was a good friend now, kept talking about endo. And I was buying my cone beam specifically because I wanted to develop an implant practice. So I was just focused, implant. I need this 3D technology so I can place implants. Yeah, I've done endo for years. Why are you even talking to me about this? However, that has flipped on its head. And, you know, I'm not too proud to say when I'm wrong. Having the cone beam technology enables us to very quickly determine the difficulty of the root canal procedure, particularly how many canals are there. You know, in our 3D family, we like to categorize things, red light, yellow light, green light. There are green light, which, you know, means easy, molar teeth out there that aren't difficult to do, especially if you're using the cone beam, particularly the axial view of the cone beam and just slicing right down through like you would as you're doing the endo. And what I like to say is that is my GPS for the procedure. I'm using that axial view to let me know what the location of the canals are, how many canals there are. I don't really care so much about length. I do care about curvature. But if all those things are relatively straightforward, that can be an easy case. And for those of us who do have cone beam, I know we still take PAs for a lot of stuff, but I really find them completely useless. It's like an archaic habit that we have that, you know, sometimes we have to have those things for the insurance company. But when I used to do the lecture on endo, one of the first things I would do is throw up a PA and ask the audience how many canals are there. And it's a particular case where you can't tell. It's two, it's three, is there four? And literally in 5 seconds with the cone beam from the axial view, you can tell this is a number 31 second molar that has two canals. Now, in the old days, when I graduated in 1989, if you'd have showed me that PA and I learned that lower molars have three canals or sometimes four, I would be hunting around for this third canal that doesn't exist. And then I would perforate the tooth. And then, you know, if I was of a certain mindset, I would say to myself, I'm never doing endo again because I've failed here.
But isn't that so true? Like that, what I love that you said it that way, because that's all I could think about. Like when I look at cone beam on endo for me now, it literally is like, I do it in two phases. One is like to determine the red light, green light cases. Like, do I want to do this endo? Like that immediately, yeah. Quickly go through the slice. How many canals? How tight are they? How's the curvature? Like, that's it. But what I found that brings me a lot of peace and reduces a lot of stress, I always stressed with accessing, like just getting into the chamber, finding the chamber, because I was so paranoid that I was gonna perf through the furcation or I was gonna go outside tooth. It's amazing when you go through these slices, like all of a sudden it's like visually you already know what it looks like,
right?
Before you ever get in, you're like, oh, okay, I know if I go a little deeper here, there's gonna be a canal, it's gonna pop up right here. And then when it does, it just like drives home this messaging of how this actually works. Mm-hmm. And you can't unsee it. Like my team members laughed because we had a new assistant join us. She's like, well,
we're going to do a root canal. Do you need a cone beam? Like, it's just a central incisor. I'm like, absolutely. Like, I will not do endo without.
I won't either. Yeah.
And you're probably going to get to this. I don't want to dive into it, but like, do you take, how many radiographs do you take during an endodontic procedure outside of the cone beam?
I take a PA at the beginning and one at the end. There's nothing in between.
Okay. I'm so glad you said that, because that's the exact way I did. And so having a new associate who's straight out of school, like, and I remember in school, because I mean, you had the pre-op, you had the initial working length, you had a corrected working length, you then had the final apical file, you then had, well, we didn't have sear-offs, so we did the whole Christmas tree cold lateral condensation technique, so then you packed a bunch of crap in there, and then you had to take a picture of that to make sure you didn't blow the sealer out, and then you had to sear it off, and you had to take a picture of the sear-off, and you wonder why people don't want to do endo. Like, it was just crazy. Technology changed that for both Kevin and I. And I'm excited for you to talk about that a little later. All right, keep going. So cone beam is the beast, the initial starting point.
First thing is just the diagnosis. Now, let's talk about, this is a run-of-the-mill, everyday lower first molar. It happens all the time. People have either decay into the pulp or toothache, whatever. Just run-of-the-mill lower molar. The procedure is root canal and crown. So what I like to do is cut my crown prep first. Now, that accomplishes a number of things, but the first thing it accomplishes is that is really the end result, is there's going to be a crown on this tooth. And if we have our CEREC technology, we can get that scanned and get that starting to be designed and milled. That can all happen in the background. But the biggest thing about that is the occlusal reduction. Now think about this. If you take a millimeter and a half, if you just flat top a molar, and you mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, you know, stressing about access. If you flat top a molar, take 1.5 or 2 millimeters off the top, and it's completely flat, and you take your cone beam image, and you go down to that level, if you go down just a little further, you're going to see the pulp on your cone beam. Well, guess what? The pulp chamber is right there. It's impossible, not impossible, it's highly unlikely that you're going to perf or get off axis or make a mistake, because the pulp is literally right there. And I think I need to back up a couple points. One of the things that I teach is when we're doing an endo, and I like, you know, we're going to use a rubber dam, I like to isolate the whole quadrant, because we were taught to isolate one tooth. Well, if I just have a clamp on one tooth and the rubber dam is just like obscuring everything else in that arch, I don't know whether that tooth is upright or angled towards the lingual or towards the buccal or has some weird variation within the arch. That can throw you off. Yep. Number one.
Totally.
Number two, if you don't flatten off the top, the cuspal inclines or whatever restorative material is left in there or whatever, that can be visually confusing. So just getting a flat surface eliminates all the reflection and weird angles that might be there. Also, when you get further along in the procedure, it's really easy to measure everything with your rubber stoppers, because you're stopping against a flat surface, some sort of inclined plane if you didn't do the reduction. So what I would like everyone to do is go look at your endo textbook or go Google Endo Access online and ignore everything that you see there, because none of that exists in real life, and it shouldn't exist. So to me, that's a trick or a cheat code to get into the tooth safely and eliminate that stress. Again, when I've done these lectures in the past, right from the get-go, I ask what concerns you most or what scares you most about doing endo, and almost everyone says access. I'm like, okay, well, I've got that beat for you. We've got that fixed.
I like it.
We've got that fixed for you.
So when you do it, like, so I think one of the things that jumps to mind with me, and when, so you're going to start with your crown prep first. on a tooth. If there is a large amount of decay, are you first like just removing as much of the decay, like if it goes in the pulp or if it's just close pulp, like just removing the decay and then doing like a core buildup first and then prepping? Or how do you handle decay and like there's big interproximal decay?
Yeah. So your CEREC likes smooth axial walls. So there's many ways to answer this question. So I'm going to answer it the way that makes me sound good. So there are situations where the decay is so large, you can't do what I'm going to say I'm going to do. But let's say that, the decay is moderately sized. It just is deep into the pulp. I will leave the decay.
Okay.
The CEREC doesn't know. Let's say the distal wall is mostly decay. All I really want is a sound margin that's not on decay. I mean, that's fundamental of doing a crown prep. But my CEREC doesn't care whether there's decay there or not. It just wants some sort of a smooth wall there. And in most of those cases, you can create some sort of a nice wall there. So I might be getting ahead of myself, but so I'll just prep it and leave the decay. Let's just leave it at that to make it easy. I will hand that off to an assistant. I'll scan it. That's one of the joys of the Prime Scan. I can scan with the rubber dam on and it picks everything up. I have a assistant or EFTA come in and start designing the crown and sending it to the mill. And this is when I'm going to start to do my access. So I will remove the decay then, gain access into the pulp and start my endo procedure. Meanwhile, the crown's being milled. You know, I can stop my endo procedure and try in the pre-glaze, stain and glaze phase if I need to. And then that can go off to the oven. Meanwhile, I'm still doing the endo. And then the real trick is once the tooth is obturated, I removed all the decay. The trick is what I call a reverse core buildup, in which I do primarily Emax in my practice. So I'm going to etch and bond everything, squirt a dual cure core buildup material into the void that's there, the pulp chamber and wherever the decay was, and put my crown with the cement over the top of that. And that will fill everything in and create my core for me. It's really hard to say that verbally and have it make sense.
Right? You need a little bit of the visual, but I think that's a
video of it.
Yeah.
What you need to think about is let's take the easiest example where there wasn't any decay into the pulp. The tooth just became necrotic. So you just have a pulp chamber there. You can squirt dual cure composite in there or build up material, cement your crown over the top of that, you're done. So the reverse core buildup is really the next trick. Now, that's not leveraging a technology. That's just leveraging a trick that you can do, a tip.
I like it. Now, did you come up with that, or where'd you hear that?
That's been on CEREC forums for a long time. Perfect.
Gosh, I feel like that was something I missed because I like how you approach that. So what I love about this workflow is, so we've got three different kind of segments. We've got the diagnostic aspect of picking and choosing your cases. And then the workflow on a global standpoint is you do your crown prep, get that scanned, get that handed off to your team that would normally be doing their same day CAD-CAM dentistry, get that going and milling. And what I find amazing is that most of us then, like, oh, well, now I can go see another patient in another room doing something else.
And that patient.
Yeah. Like, no, you see this patient who's already in the chair. You're already paying for the chair anyway. They're already here. But what I love about it is it doesn't add much time at all, because by the time the crown is being designed, gets milled, gets fired, gets glazed and all of that, usually what I have found in these cases, the timing ends up as like, almost like sometimes I'll be done with the endo before that, usually, actually. And I'm like waiting for the crown. I'm like, all right, let's go, guys. But it times out really well where you took a procedure that you're blocked out anyway, whether it's 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 90 minutes, whatever it is for your crown. And you literally almost doubled the production value of that time frame. And to me, that's how you leverage technology without adding another appointment, without adding more team members or whatever. Like, you're leveraging your existing team, your existing workflows, your existing technology, and it's amazing. Now, I think the key component, like all of us, not all of us, a lot of us understand the CAD/CAM workflow. And if you don't do CAD/CAM, like I get that, but your talk
I
to
think
us.
You can still do it if you don't.
Totally.
Yeah. But go ahead. What were you going to ask?
So I do think what makes this really efficient, though, is your actual workflow for how you do your endo, like the endo. Like, I feel like that's a procedure. Everybody just like, oh, and then you do the root canal. You really enjoy your Comet system. And I do want you to talk a little bit about that because that's a system a lot of people aren't familiar with.
Yeah.
But talk to us about how you gain access, what you use, how you clean the canals. Are you, what are you irrigating with? What are you sealing with? How are you obturating?
Yeah, so the Comet EndoPilot, let me just tell a little story about that. My Comet rep, who is now one of the regional managers for Comet, used to be my Patterson rep. She quit, she started working for Comet. We are friends. Just as an aside, she texted me today in the middle of chaos, and I realized 4 hours later I hadn't responded. And I texted her back, I'm so sorry. And she goes, what's the deal? I texted you 4 hours ago. And
you didn't forget about it.
What I said was, I don't understand time zones.
That's what, guys, it's the best get out of jail free card. Whether it's your family, your spouse, you don't understand the time zones. That's all you got to worry about.
Anyway, she's a good friend. She came to me about 3 or 4 years ago and said, we're selling this endo system. Would you try it? And my internal response was, I'm fine with the endo system I'm using. I don't need to do this, but you're my friend. I will try it. I was reluctant. So I think I did a bicuspid first. You know, there's a learning curve with everything, but I was like, hey, this is kind of good. And then like the second or third one, I got done so quickly. I was like, my gosh, this thing is really amazing. So the Comet EndoPilot is a endo motor with the apex locator built in. So it's going to measure every file that you put into the tooth. So you don't, the genius is it's got everything right there. It also has a heat source. So when you get to the obturation point, you just click on the iPad screen that's on it, click to that, and then you can sear off your gutta percha. So the fact that it has the endo or the apex locator built into it is really a time saver. Now there's a lot of endo motors that have that built in, but the genius with this is mirroring crocodile files, which I hate that name, but that's what they are. They're like, it's the dumbest name I've ever heard of, but they work amazing. So my workflow is I identify the canals. There's a orifice opener that is part of the crocodile system. That goes in first. It's going to open up the top third of the canal. And that's important because that's where a lot of your binding is going to happen. That orifice opener, in my experience, kicks up a lot of debris, so a lot of dentin. So you've got to really irrigate really well and get all that stuff out of there. Otherwise, you're going to block yourself out with the next files. And then I'm going to use a ProGlider file that is like a number 10. That will go to the apex and give us our working length. Because it's measuring the apex as we go, I can get my working length very quickly.
And are these files reciprocating?
So that's the other part. Thanks, Tim. The crocodile files are both. They are rotary files, and then when they meet resistance, the handpiece recognizes that and starts to reciprocate.
Interesting. I used to use a system that did a similar thing, but then they quit doing it for some reason. Actually, I think the company went out. But no, that I always loved that because you get more efficiency from a rotary file, from a cutting efficiency.
They cut really well, and then you can feel it change, and there's a sound effect that changes when it goes to reciprocating, so you know that that's happening. So, you know, tactilely, you gotta, you know, like, don't jam it in there. You've gotta now be careful. But yeah, so it's both rotary and reciprocating at the same time when the reciprocation is needed.
And I think the other thing that I want to clarify, just because until I started doing this type of system. I didn't really grasp when he's talking about the Apex locator being built in. Like, I think a lot of us are like, well, I got an Apex locator. Like, what he's talking about is the Apex locator is built into the handpiece. So as you're doing your rotary handpiece, that's where you're getting constant feedback.
Correct.
So this becomes the foundation of why Kevin and I only take a pre-op and a post-op
Correct.
Film, because it is so consistent whether it's a hand file or your rotary files. It is always like it is you like right away. The first time I did these types of systems, I was like, all right, I got to take a few x-rays. I got to verify this, like trust, but verify. Right. Mm-hmm. But you do like two of them. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm never taking an x-ray again. Like unless I get a weird readout, it is like the most efficient, seamless, predictable. Like I don't even worry about like, we'll take the final x-ray. And I'm like, I don't even care. Like I usually won't even look at it. It's more just for the insurance company.
Right. I know that it's going to be there. And let's take a step back with that. I have that question a lot. How many x-rays do you take? And I know that we're stuck on that or we've been taught that. But if you really remember what you were taught, there's the radiographic apex and there's the electronic apex and there's the actual apex. And, you know, we've all either done endos or had endos come back from the specialist that appear like they're filled short, but they're not. There's some bend at the, you know, curve right at the end that the apex is coming out the side of the tooth and not the apex. So I just trust that. Whatever it is, that's what it is. And so I'm 100% confident that my apex locator is way more accurate. You said something early on in this about taking the working length x-ray and then the adjusted working length x-ray. Do I really trust myself taking x-ray with a rubber dam on and some, you know, bisect the angle, whatever craziness that we are taught, that I'm a millimeter short or a millimeter long? I can't measure that, but I know that my apex locator is accurate within a half a millimeter or a quarter millimeter. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
And you do it, like I said, you do enough of these and you start seeing the, like, I'm a big advocate. The results speak for themselves.
Sure. Yeah.
It really does. And like everybody tries to oversimplify endo sometimes. I feel like we could do it in one, like it was first, it was like we have six files and then it was four and now we can do it in three and now we have a one file. And I'm like, it's not about being that, but like where I always struggle is like, I want to know the length. Like, am I at length? Like, cause you're doing all of this blind and you're just doing tactile sensation and you do enough of these where, like, if you go through and you know, the whole recapitulate and you blow through and you hit the PDL and then the crap bleeds everywhere and then and that's an issue. But having this constant feedback just helps develop trust in the ecosystem and the technology. Like, for me, that's what it was. Like, I just believe in it because the results kept speaking for themselves.
Yeah. So I do want to piggyback on that. I think Comet inadvertently was selling this as a one or two file system, and it's not. And it shouldn't be treated like that. Now, on a small canal or a narrow canal, like the mesial buccal canal of the lower first molar, there might be one file that you're going to get in there. You're going to put in the orifice opener and a number 20 file, and you're done. But that's because the size of the canal is such that you're not going to get anything else in there. But
the anatomy is dictating it. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So that's, you know, the Comet Endo Pilot has changed the game to the point where early on in that utilization of it, where I realized I could get these done quicker, I was like, you know, I would fill in on the schedule like, yeah, we can do this. And my assistants would be like, what? You're crazy. I can be done with the end, the hard part to me, the hard part, the filing of this in 5 or 10 minutes. And or I can be done with a molar in, you know, 12 minutes or 15 minutes. The hard part is done. That's not every case. And I'm not saying that to brag or anything like that. It's just,
you're just that good, man.
No, when all the stars aligned, particularly a bicuspid with one or two, those are quick. Those can be done quick.
It almost, like the first few times, I don't know about you, but the first time, a few times I did this, it was so quick that it almost felt like I was forgetting something.
Yes.
Like, I felt like I screwed something up. I'm like, there's no way I'm done, right? Like, I got to do more. filing or something. Like, because before it was just like, it just drove me nuts how inefficient it was. So I love that.
I started with hand filed. I hand filed molars.
You and I like, both.
No way I'm going to do that. So once we've achieved our final file in all the canals, I'm going to irrigate with sodium hypochlorite right out of the bottle, right out of the Clorox bottle. We're going to let that sit. By the time this procedure is flowing, you know, the crown's probably in the oven or about to be in the oven. That sort of thing is happening. So, you know, that's in the back of my mind. I can hear all that stuff happening. I do use the endoactivator, which I like to call Mother's Helper. It vibrates in the canal. And,
for those who don't, there are a lot of people who have no idea what you're talking about, by the way. What is the endoactivator?
Endoactivator, why
do you do it?
Is a sonic vibrating.
It's a vibrator, man. Let's call it what it is. It's a little vibrator.
It's a tiny little vibrator you put in the canal. And that's what you do.
It is what you do. I went like, yeah, this is going down a path. I didn't think this was going to go. I'm going to have to put an explicit emblem on this episode, I think. But
everything,
so you're putting the
do,
vibrator in the small little canal. Okay, keep going.
Dentistry is a that's what she said joke at some level. So we put that in the canal, and what that does is it agitates the sodium hypochlorite to clean anything that might be in the small little tubules or nooks and crannies of the canal system. Part of the problem, quote, problem of filing these too fast is thinking that you can get to the next step really quickly. And really the filing is part of the procedure, but the cleansing of the canal or disinfecting of the canal, that takes time. So the sodium hypochlorite needs to be in there at, you know, at least 20, 25 minutes. So, you know, the vibrating with the endoactivator helps accomplish that.
So you don't go too fast. I got it.
Right.
No, it's what this is like, all jokes aside, this is actually a really, really important concept, because with these procedures and these new technologies for endo, you can do what used to take forever from the filing standpoint extremely efficiently now, like crazy efficiently. But the key is you still can't beat biology. It's kind of like a bone graft. Like you have to let that stuff sit. Like you can't beat biology. When it comes to how we're disinfecting and killing bacteria, like you have to let the solution work. And so what I love about this crown, the reverse kind of doing the crown prep and then the endo and then delivering the crown, is it forces you to slow down at that point. So like you do the filing and you have to wait. So you're kind of like, it's like a safety mechanism I find in my practice that I'm like, I'm not blowing through this endo too quick, because I think when we say, yeah, I'm doing this in 12 minutes, people are like, you're doing root canal in 12 minutes. I'm like, no, we're cleaning and shaping in less than 12 minutes. And then we still have to get the irrigation and disinfection to go that we just have to give time.
Yeah. So, you know, there's some times where I fill the canal with sodium hypochlorite and just get up and walk away. You know, because it just needs to sit there, and, you know, then we're agitating it with the endoactivator for some length of time, you know, the appropriate length of time. After that, I'll suction all of that out, and then we're going to use EDTA, liquid EDTA, to clean the smear layer. That's the last thing that goes in the canal. I'll also use the endoactivator with that just to get everything agitated and pushed around inside that. You know, one other little trick to accomplish good cleansing of the canal and disinfecting of the canal is to fill the pulp chamber in the canal with sodium hypochlorite and then try in your master cones. You know, that's acting as a piston, in a sense, to spread that out. That's when, you know, that's part of what's happening during the milling time and oven time. But I got out of order there a little bit. So the EDTA is the last thing to go in, and some paper points, and then we're ready to obturate.
So do you do what? So I guess so this differs a little bit from my protocol. So that's good. So your last irrigation is the EDTA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I want to clarify for everybody is, so that sodium hypochlorite is used to kill off organic material, bacteria, that kind of thing.
Eat up.
Yep.
Residual pulp tissue and bacteria.
Yeah. All that. And then the EDTA. Is was it 17%? I don't even remember what
17%, I believe. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So that EDTA is used to dissolve inorganic material. So dentin, the smear layer, all that that's created with all of our rotary instruments and crocodile files that are just whipping around in there. And then by doing that, it opens up all those tubules. Some people will do a third step, which I do just because that's the way I was taught, and it's hard to break old habits, I guess, is to do one final rinse with hypo again to theoretically penetrate the tubules with more hypochlorite in theory. But really, you're kind of already doing that with your piston effect and all that. So
I mean,
I'm glad you use EDTA, because I feel like when I was taught in school, like, we didn't use a lot of liquid EDTA. Like, that was like something we just didn't do. And I find that like everything about it, like the gutta percha, just the sealer gets in better, the gutta percha forms better. Like, everything just seems to work better when you do it that way.
Yeah, you've really cleansed the walls of the canal. And I don't remember the percentage. There's a study I read. I don't read a lot of studies, but I do remember this one. There's a higher percentage of failure when you don't use the EDTA. So, because you're leaving basically junk behind. So the EDTA is the last thing in, paper points. And then I just used a single cone obturation. So one of the unique factors of the Procodile files is that they're left turning. They turn counterclockwise. That's how they file the canals. So for me to apply sealer inside the canal, I need them to run clockwise. So there, I have a setting on my EndoPilot that I can make it run clockwise.
Okay.
So reverse is clockwise. That's confusing. But I just load up some Comet BioSeal on the file, introduce it into the canal and spin it. And hands-on classes, we've used those Clearview teeth, plastic teeth. And it's amazing to me. I hate doing plastic, but Comet always is like, we have these plastic blocks for you. And I'm like, well, I don't know about you, but I don't practice on plastic blocks. I've never had someone come into my office and have a toothache in a plastic block. So those are useless to me. I like to see the actual tooth. But the fascinating thing to me is, if you load up the sealer and run it clockwise in the canal and you can see everything, it just...
Isn't that amazing? It goes everywhere there. Yeah.
It lines the canal like that. And then I load up some sealer on the gutta percha and drive it home. And that's just going to add more to that. And if you're someone who likes to see a little sealer puff, if you want to pump that gutta percha in the canal... Again, explicit warning for the listeners at home. If you want to pump that in there a couple times, you'll get your sealer puff. If that makes you feel good.
I'm loving it. This is going to create, like, now my brain's going, like, all right, what the hell's the title of this episode going to be? We're going to come up with something good here. This will be good. So, all right, so you do your last, you're doing a single cone there, which is pretty common. Some people, what the other techniques people use are, you know, the warm carriers. I've never been a really big fan of those.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah. I do a similar thing. I do like a single cone and then I sear it and then I do a warm backfill. Same concept.
Yeah.
But no, so you get all that and then you do your reverse buildup and crown. And what's amazing to me is the patient's reaction to this. They're like, I'm done. Like, yeah, we got it all done. And if you think about things from the patient's perspective, the alternative for many of us is like, okay, you have caries, so we're gonna remove the caries here and we're gonna see how deep it goes. And then you're like, oh crap, it needs a root canal. Well, I don't do root canals.
Yeah, right.
So now I'm gonna temporize it. So that's one appointment. Now I'm gonna send them to another clinic, which may be 20, 30, 40 minutes away, who knows how far. And they have to go see some stranger that they don't know and don't trust, and they're gonna have to have a root canal procedure done, and then they're gonna get done with that. And they got to come back to you. You got to numb them up for the third time. And then you got to try to prep the crap out of the whatever buildup was done by the endodontist. And now you have to try to fabricate same day crown. Or if you don't do CAD-CAM dentistry, you're prepping the tooth and then putting on a temporary. And so when we start thinking the patient experience, like, this is, man, you talk about wowing people and driving value of time and money for wins. Like, that's, T-Bone always talks about technology, like driving down costs to the patient, increasing profitability of the business. Like, this is a perfect example of,
yes,
you're saving the patient money because of all their time that they're not taking off from work. and your profitability per hour went through the roof without any more time or more patience. Right. It's awesome.
And so you're hitting on something that I, you know, is near and dear to my heart, that we are selling time. And so when everything goes perfectly, and we can talk about what you do if you can't get the canals dry and all that, which that happens. But if everything goes perfectly, we've just done, I will tell the patient, in the old days, this used to take 3 or 4 appointments, and we did it in 2 hours, and you're done. This tooth is done. I mean, that is something to be, I think, to be proud about. But to echo what you said, I have preached forever to my team and to my associate and anybody that'll listen, is we're selling time in a chair. And I want to maximize that time for profitability's sake of every single hour. And that is an extremely productive, profitable appointment. But it took offhand comment that T-Bone said years ago, I'm always selfish. I'm thinking about my time. Mm-hmm. It's the patient's time too. So to spend 2 hours at my office and everything's done, like you just said, there's no trip to the endodontist. This literally would have taken 3 or 4 appointments in the old days. And that is extremely valuable. And what I liken it to is that we are living in a society of instant gratification, and you can debate the merits of that, but every one of us last month ordered something off of Amazon. You were sitting on your couch, and you can order anything in the world from your couch with your thumb. So anything from, we ordered some towels to some dog toys, and you expect to get that like that. If you are able, Tim, you and I are able to deliver that level of efficiency in our offices, and our patients recognize that. We're delivering them an iPhone experience for these procedures. So that's what the market is, you know, kind of demanding.
Amen, brother. This is why I wanted you on, man, because this is what it's about. And, you know, we got to talk about some clinical dentistry tonight and all that stuff. But really what I wanted everybody to see was Kevin's passion and rationale and how you maximize technology and how it's patient-centered and how doing, you know, he bought his Combium to do implants, you guys, yet here he is still doing root canals and implants. Like, you just never know where things will take you. I mean, his relationship, we talked about relationships tonight, his relationship with his Patterson rep was the reason that he felt like, okay, I'll try this for you. I mean, imagine if he never tried that. He'd be like stuck doing the old endo ways that he didn't really like, and he wouldn't be doing any of this. So Kevin, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on tonight. For anybody who's not already listening to Evan's podcast, you guys have to check that out. So much good stuff. They're much funnier because they've got a good host, and, you know, they got the two of them that banter with guests. So it's a ton of fun. But Kevin, if people want to catch up with you or ask you more questions about endo and how they can get started with endo and doing all these things, how do they get a hold of you?
The best way is to join our Facebook group, the Very Clinical Facebook group. We're pretty active in there. And if you want to email me, it's kwfryerdds@gmail.com. I'm happy to answer any questions. I feel like I do that all day long anyway, and it's part of the joy of doing what we do. Yeah, reach out if you have some questions, and I'd be happy to help you.
Brother, love you, man. Thanks for coming on tonight. Thanks for hanging out with us, you guys. Until next week, keep smiling, and we'll check you later.
Thanks so much, Tim.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when all the new content is released. And don't forget to rate, review, and share this podcast with all your friends and colleagues. For more information about all things happening within the 3D Dentist family, follow us at www.3d-dentist.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you are leaving with new insights to help transform and level up your practice. Until next time, keep smiling.